But What Do We Know podcast, episode 128. I'm Marissa.
And I'm Anna.
And we're here!
Yeah, sorry we weren't here last week. That was my bad. I pregnancy stuff. I just couldn't do it.
No, it's... We got you. Are you feeling better?
I'm feeling better. I'm okay. I had a rough day today, just vented to Marissa about, but it's fine. I made it. We're here. We're recording. It's fine.
Despite all the odds, we are here.
Despite all the Monday odds, we made it.
Well, I guess we should talk about how it was Anna's baby shower this weekend.
It was, and we made it through.
Oh my god. It was beautiful.
So, I was just like, I just want to get through this day and make it through without, like, screaming or crying and make sure that everyone doesn't hate me at the end of the shower.
No, I don't know why you think anyone would hate you.
I know for myself that, like, I'm not big on, like, baby showers stuff like that. So I try to make it as, or try to have it as chill as possible. So I was like, I just want people to, like, go get their food, like, hang out and, like, get some prizes if that's what we're doing and, like, leave.
It was, like I said, it was the least annoying baby shower I've ever been to.
Thank God.
It was super nice. It was very bouge.
Dang. Oh, bouge.
It was bouge.
And I just want to put this out there. So if anyone follows me on social media, that I got called a Kardashian 3 times at my shower. And I just want to say that because my dress was very similar to Kylie Jenner's baby shower dress.
Yeah.
But I bought my dress prior to Kylie posting the photos. So that was not intentional. I did that on my own. Kylie copied me, if anything.
Kylie, that bitch!
So I just want to put that out there. I got called a Kardashian. Oh, very Kardashian of you. Oh, you Anna Kardashian? I was like, no. This was pre-planned before Kylie. So just putting that out there.
I loved it.
Oh, thank you.
That was super cute.
Felt huge when I looked at the photos. I'm like, oh my god, I am a planet.
You're literally carrying a child. It's fine.
So that's done. So now we brought all the baby stuff home, obviously. And I couldn't even, like, look at it when we brought it home. I'm like, this is too overwhelming. But yesterday on Sunday, I went through most of it and, like, sorted stuff. So now it's just a matter of, like, putting everything together and, like, preparing and weird stuff like that. So
are you so excited?
Excited's not the right word. I'm just, like, so, like, I feel so unprepared, but at the same time, I also don't want to prepare, because I'm like, once I prepare, that means, like, it's time, and it's, like, true. Like, game time.
Like, it's, like, game time pretty soon.
I know. So, hopefully this weekend, Eric has to put the crib together. Aww. So once we get all of that together and I have everything put away, it'll be like, okay, like, I'll feel more okay if the baby just decides to show up one day.
More so. Like a mother.
It's crazy times.
I'm proud of you. Very, very
proud. Yeah. Oh, well. Don't say that until the baby's here.
Oh, so. My God. You're not going to leave it on the street. Ew. I hate it.
Ew, gross. We also went dress shopping for you.
We did go dress shopping. That was
weird.
It was the least dress shopping appointment of all time. It made me decide to just do online.
Well, I feel like the girl helping us was in a different state of mind.
Yeah, she was definitely having either a day or some substances before the day started, but I mean, it was really nice to see everyone, so, but it was a little bit, it was a little overwhelming.
It was overwhelming and underwhelming.
Exactly! So I'm like, fuck it, we're getting them online!
It's just like they didn't have anything that was, like, really your vibe for your wedding.
Yeah, so David's Bridal Whitehall. Not the place. For us. But
not for us, for other people.
Yeah, whatever. We'll find. I have to keep telling myself that I'm still 6 months away, seven months away, but it feels like not a lot of time.
I know, I know.
I had a little mental, well, I had two breakdowns. One of them I already told you about. And then today, I went to get my went to check to see where my swatches were, like the shipping things, and they haven't sent them yet. So I called the number. I was like, I need them right now. And I was talking to Chelsea, and she's like, Marissa, it's February 7th. She's like, you have time. It takes a month for them to get sent out. Like,
swatches take a month? Oh, my God.
No, no, no. The dresses take a month.
Oh, okay.
So she's like, you can literally wait until the beginning of summer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know. I just don't like it.
That would be actually better, because then hopefully I won't be as huge, and I can get the right measurements for the dress.
Oh, well, then just wait.
Yeah.
It'll probably take that long until I get my swatches. I don't know. It'll be fine. Everything will be fine.
It'll all work out the way that it should.
That's what I keep telling myself.
Yeah. That's what I keep trying to tell myself.
It's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah. It's not fun.
Oh my God, I have this weird medical mystery happening to me recently.
Oh God, what now?
This is like a legit weird one. It's like not like, I haven't been, it sounds so crazy, but like, I have been losing feeling in my right hand for like the past couple weeks, like maybe like two or three weeks. My hand just goes completely numb. And I can't, like, you know when it falls asleep and you, like, shake it? It doesn't even come out when I shake it or, like, bend my fingers or anything. And then it started that now I'm getting, like, these shooting pains in my hand. And
that
I can't.
What happened to Alyssa?
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, she had to get, like, surgery.
That's what, and I was like, oh, this seems really weird. I thought, because it got much worse when I went to Orange Theory on Thursday. Like, the next day, I felt it was much worse. So I'm like, oh, maybe I just, like, pulled something. But yeah. I stretched, and, like, nothing hurts up here.
Yeah.
And then I was telling Cliff about it last night on the phone. He's like, you probably should go to the doctor. So I sent a thing in the portal thinking they'd be like, oh, just stretch it. And they're like, yeah, you need to come in, like, right away.
Yeah, that's what happened. This happened years ago to Alyssa. I don't remember exactly what the diagnosis was. I'm assuming it was some kind of like nerve damage or something, but she went to the doctor. She's like, yeah, like sometimes I just can't feel my arm. It just like goes numb. And they're like, yeah, that's not okay. And whatever testing they did, she ended up having to get surgery to like correct it, and was like in a cast for a while.
It's the most like bizarre thing. Like I will hold, when I have, like, a book or something, usually I hold it with, like, one hand.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can't even hold it, like.
Yeah, you should go get that checked out now.
I'm going tomorrow.
You don't want to be in a cast for your wedding.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
New fear unlocked. Oh, my God.
But, yes, I'm going tomorrow for that.
Okay, good. Keep me posted.
It's like, and the other thing is too, and this is when I was like thinking about it, I've been waking up in the middle of the night because I can't feel my hand. And I, in like my mind, I'm like, oh, it's probably, you're probably, ooh, geez Louise. I'm like, oh, I'm probably just sleeping on it or something. And then the pain started and I'm like, this seems weird.
Yeah, if the pain is bad enough to like wake you up out of sleep, that's an issue.
Yeah, I don't know. That's my right hand, too, so I'm like,
oh, no.
What am I gonna do?
Oh, my God. We are falling apart.
You know what? The listeners should be lucky they have us No, I'm just kidding. They really are.
We might not make it to next week.
No, we have a guest next week, so we barely have to hold on. She's gonna do the. She's gonna be the brunt of the entertainment.
Oh gosh, we are out of it. Okay,
I know. We should probably like do this episode.
Okay.
I guess. I don't know. So, as you know, our sponsor is Escandalo. And Hair by Escandalo and the other side are sister businesses that work together to provide everything from awesome haircuts and colors to waxing services, facials, makeup, lash extensions, and soon-to-be nails. The salon offers a wide array of talented specialty stylists and offers virtual consultations before your color appointments to ensure you get what you're expecting. The other side is a boutique spa and clothing store featuring jewelry from different artists all over the country and curated upcycled fashion. None of their services or clothing are gendered, so everyone can feel safe and included from start to finish. Want an appointment? Visit their website, escandalohair.com, or on Instagram at escandalohair for the online booking link. 10% off your services if you mention But What Do We Know?
Thanks, Escandalo. I've been up for like 14 hours.
I've been up for 2 days. That's what I thought you were going to say for some reason.
Now I'm up to waking up twice in the night to go pee, so not sleeping well.
Do you have a pregnancy pillow?
Yeah.
I'm not pregnant, but I want one of those.
They're comfy.
They look awesome.
Because I like to straddle it while I'm sleeping. It's good. Maybe the cats love it too.
Oh, and I'm not in the bed.
When I'm not in the bed, Oz goes in there and he just props himself up on the pregnancy pillow.
Also, while we're doing ads, I still have some spaces for Anna's maternity leave guest co-hosts. Surprisingly, not a lot of spaces, but probably four.
Damn.
Yeah, I'm getting real scared.
Be fine. If someone thinks that they can chit-chat for an hour or so, let Marissa know.
I'm going to be taking a lot of breaks, I feel like, because I'm like, nobody's going to want to do this with me. But I have the first 2 or 3 months booked up. The first two. It's the last month that I don't have.
Damn, you're good, Marissa.
Yo.
You might just have to do it yourself, and just an hour of you talking into a microphone.
I can't do that. I need you to be here. So I did this research last week, so I'm not making any promises.
I hope Marissa remembers what she researched.
I remember, because I was just explaining it today to somebody. I don't know who I was even explaining it to, but I was recapping it. Is it good? I don't know.
It's great, I'm sure.
Well, now I can't find it, so. Might not be so great. Okay, here it is. It's actually a pretty short one.
Good, because mine's kind of long.
Okay. So, mine is on the disappearance of Andrew Gosden. Have you heard of this?
I don't think so.
I think when I describe it, you will.
You love those disappearances.
This one is so good, though. Well, not next week. In 2 weeks, I don't have a disappearance one.
Oh, look at you planning ahead.
It's in the book that I'm reading, so.
Ooh, okay.
I was because, I'm trying to read books, so that's the only reason I know.
Trying to be smart.
Okay, so Andrew Gosden was born on July 10th, 1993, to parents Kevin and Glennis Gosden. And they lived in a place called Balby, which is a suburb of Doncaster, South Yorkshire in England. Andrew, he was extremely bright. He was in the top 5% of students for math in the country. Oh. He had 100% attendance at the Macaulay Catholic High School. He was on the Young, Gifted, and Talented program. He was described as a prize-winning mathematician. And they said he was destined for Cambridge.
Smarty.
A little smarty pants. He wasn't super popular, but, like, he wasn't disliked. Like, he wasn't bullied or anything like that. Like, I feel like that's how I was in school.
I don't know how I was in school. I have a very hard understanding of how people perceive me.
True. I think most people, I think everyone liked me, but I wouldn't call myself popular.
Yeah, I definitely was not popular in high school.
So,
but also, like my graduating class was like 500 people, so.
Oh, mine was like 60.
Yeah.
But whatever, it just doesn't matter. It was a good time.
Nah, that was okay.
You're like, fuck high school. I mean, most of it was okay. But Andrew, he liked to be alone. Except for, like, with his little group of friends. But he didn't exhibit any signs of, like, depression or anxiety, anything like that. So he was also pretty small for his age. He looked more like a 12-year-old than a 14-year-old, which he was when he went missing.
Okay.
He had kind of like long light brown hair, and it was cut in like a very like emo kind of way. Like, it was like side swept long hair.
Oh yeah, the emo bangs.
Oh, he had a very emo look.
Mm-hmm. That was the time. He was like 2 years younger than us, so
He was actually planning to dye his hair black before he went missing. So he was, like, in it to win it, honey.
Yes.
He also had glasses, and he was deaf in his left ear. And he also had a very distinctive double ridge on his right ear. He was very into video games and heavy metal. The day that he was last seen, he was wearing a Slipknot shirt.
Okay.
So...
Not my genre, but okay.
No, definitely not mine either. So, during the 2007 school summer holidays, Andrew's parents had suggested that he go alone to London to stay with his grandmother for a little bit in the summer. But he chose not to go. He wanted to stay home. So, September... I just put that in. I don't know if that's actually important, but it felt important to me. So, September 14th, 2007, Andrew was back in school. It was pretty much like a regular day. Andrew's mother said that he woke up a little bit late, like a little bit later than he usually did. And he was a little bit more grumpy and irritable. But, like, I don't know, I feel like that's how most of my days start. So,
like, teenager going to school, so.
Yeah. They say, like... I feel like when I went to high school, I woke up at, like, 4:30 a.m.
So early.
So, like, probably him getting up late is, like, 5:30.
When I was in high school for, like, I forget which year it was, but one year my mom would drive me to school, and she would not talk to me the entire time I was in the car because I was so grumpy, and, like, I just sat there drinking my coffee at, like, age 16, like, not talking to a single soul.
It sucked, though.
Ugh. Now I'm, like, fucking up at 5 o'clock in the morning, like, no problem, but...
Yeah, now I'm very cheerful in the morning.
Well, I'm not cheerful, but... Oh,
it's my time to shine.
You are a morning person.
I am. I love it.
Me and Eric, like, don't even talk to each other in the morning. We'll pass each other, like, in the kitchen, and, like, we don't say a word to each other.
No, that's when I do my best thinking, because my meds don't kick in, so my mind is like...
Got all, like, the brain zaps in the morning.
Oh, my God. I'm like... So I have to do an extensive routine or else I'm fucked for the day. Yeah, so he went to his bus stop around 8:05 a.m. And he was witnessed going there by a local reverend. Oh my god, my hand is numb right now.
Stop.
I'm just sitting here, like, not doing anything. I'm gonna text
Alyssa afterwards, ask her what was her
diagnosis. Yes, please. So he walked to his bus stop, and I guess he waited until he knew for sure that, like, his family had left. I believe he had a sister, too. So he waited for her to go to school and his parents to go to work. So Andrew he walked back home. I actually saw two different timelines for this, but this is the one I saw the most. He walked back home and he took off his school uniform blazer. He put it on the back of his desk chair and then he changed into a black Slipknot t-shirt and jeans. And he grabbed a black bag to take with him. So the black bag was embellished with, like, rock and metal bands. And he also took his wallet, his keys, and a PlayStation portable console. So he didn't bring anything else with him. There weren't any possessions identified as missing. But it was pretty quickly established that he did not take his passport with him.
Okay.
He walked to a cash machine, like an ATM, at a local garage, and there he withdrew 200 pounds, euros. They don't use pounds anymore.
But maybe when did this all happen?
2007.
Okay, I forget when they made the conversion, but...
Well, I'll say euros.
Okay.
So, 2,000 euros from his bank account. He had, like, a savings account. Which was that was like all the money that was in there. He had about 214 euros in the account, but the ATM only allowed him to withdraw in 20 euro increments.
Okay.
So at 8:30 a.m., he departed from the house. I mixed this up here. So... At 8:30 a.m., I believe he departed from the garage and was seen walking towards Westfield Park on a local CCTV. I might have this a little backwards. I'm not 100%. He walked to the Doncaster Railway Station and purchased a one-way ticket. Okay, wait. I see where I messed up. I'm sorry. Okay. So, after he left his house... He left his house at 8:30, and he walked down Littlemore Lane towards Westfield Park on a neighbor's CCTV. That's where he was seen. He withdrew the cash. Then he went to the railway station.
Okay.
So it was a one-way ticket to London, which cost 31 euro and 40 cents. Wait, do they do cents in...
I don't know what they... I was just thinking, I was like, do they do cents? I don't know.
31.40 euro.
There you go.
Everyone's like, wow, Americans are fucking dumb.
We are.
Oh my god. So the ticket seller later recalled that she had told Andrew that the return ticket only cost 50 pence more. But he... insisted on purchasing a single ticket. So I guess it was like a better deal for him to get the return ticket as well.
Right. But he's like, I don't need it.
Yeah, he just got the ticket to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So at 9:35, he was witnessed boarding the train to King's Cross Station alone, which is in London. And there was one woman, the woman who was sitting next to her, the woman... that was sitting next to Andrew, described him as being really quiet and very engrossed in his PlayStation. But after he had gone missing, it was also discovered that Andrew did not bring his PlayStation charger with him, which his parents thought was very weird if he was planning to go on a trip.
That's annoying.
Can you imagine, like, you're going on a trip and then It dies, like...
Bored.
So he arrived at 11:20 at King's Cross Station, and he was captured on CCTV footage, leaving the main entrance of the station at 11:25 a.m. And this was the last confirmed sighting of Andrew Gosden. So when he failed to attend his classes in the morning, the school teachers called his parents. The school believed, well, they thought they had called his parents and left a voicemail, but they actually called the wrong number.
Oh, God.
So the parents never got this message. Which, okay, so I have a funny story about this. Did I tell you about the kid that I keep getting phone calls about?
I don't think so.
It was, like, more in the summer. It hasn't happened recently because I kept getting these calls from this middle school by me. And they're like, hey, we have Brian here. He doesn't feel good. He wants to come home. And I so I keep calling. And I've called them already. And then they called me again. And I called them back. And I was like, I am not Brian's mom. Like, I feel bad. Like, if he doesn't feel good. So they're like, oh my god, thanks for calling. Like, I felt like they thought I was a weirdo for calling back, but I'm like, I'm not gonna leave this kid hanging all day in the nurse's office.
Find his mom.
Like, dang. So it reminded me of that. I'm like, what asshole didn't call the school back?
So the mom purposely left the wrong number. She's like, don't fucking call me about this kid.
I don't want to hear anything. Yo, you're going to have that soon. Well, not soon, God, but, like, kind of soon.
At some point.
Yeah. You gotta come pick up your kid from school.
I'm like, unless he has a fever or he's vomiting, he's staying in school. Sorry. Oh. Knowing my kid will have, like, a fucking panic attack and, like, needs me to get him out, like, every day. Yeah. Like, same buddy.
Yeah. Welcome to life. Oh, yeah, so they called the wrong number. And that evening, or the evening before this day, the family and a family friend had said, no, I'm lying, it was the same day. The family and a family friend had sat down for dinner, thinking that Andrew was either downstairs in their cellar, like their finished basement playing video games, or in his room doing homework. But the family discovered that he was not in the house, so they thought maybe he was with a friend or a neighbor and had simply lost track of time.
I feel like that's how my parents felt I was when I was a kid, before my sisters were born. Like, so quiet that they didn't even know if I was in the house. Like,
she might be kidnapped or she might be reading a book or something. The friend, they called all his friends, and he had a small group of friends, so it wasn't a...
Mm-hmm. It wasn't a lengthy list.
Yeah, and they all said he was not there, and he had not been at school that day. So they called the police at around 7 p.m. that night, and within 3 hours of discovering the disappearance, a missing person leaflet was produced for circulation. The family and friends started to search the area, and... The police that weekend searched the bushes near the home in Doncaster, but they found nothing. So 27 days passed before police actually looked at the CCTV footage from the train station and found the video of Andrew boarding and leaving the train.
I wonder if I'm sure they must have checked that his bank... account was drained.
Yeah, because I think his parent, it was one of those like kid bank accounts. Yeah. Yeah. The family and the police investigated the possibility that he had gone to London. There's like a couple different things. That he had gone to London to meet someone whom he had met over the internet. Mm-hmm. However, there's no evidence for this. Andrew didn't use a computer at home. He didn't have an email address, and he had not set up an online account on his Xbox or his PlayStation.
Hmm.
The police took the computers from the school and their library, the local library, but their digital forensic investigators found no trace of any activity by him. So they sent the serial number of Andrew's PlayStation to Sony headquarters, who checked and found that there was no record of an account being set up or communication established on the device. The Sony PlayStation 1000 had a DNAS authentication system, allowing Sony to see when a PlayStation had been connected to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have, the only computer in the house was his sister's laptop, which had only been in her possession for 8 weeks. The sister stated that he didn't seem interested in social media or connecting with other people through the internet because the quote is, she said, he just didn't seem social.
No.
So there was at that time a 2007 YouTube convention that Andrew's parents...
YouTube convention?
Remember when those were a thing?
I don't remember, no.
They did, because I used to be real big in, like, the beauty YouTubes.
Mm-hmm.
I remember they do, like, conventions for it.
For, like, content creators?
Yeah.
Oh.
So they thought maybe he was there. It was in London, so they thought he might have been attending that. There were also several bands playing in the area that Andrew was a fan of, including 30 Seconds to Mars and, a band called Sixth, S-I-K-T-H. I don't know what that is. So the family hypothesized that maybe Andrew went to London to attend a show by a band that he was also a fan of. It was a Finnish band, Him. They were doing a promo signing at the HMV store on Oxford Street on September 17th, 2007. They're also doing an invitation-only show in Soho. And the only way to get into the show was by completing various contests and giveaways. So they investigated this lead, and actually the band Him helped try and find Andrew as well.
Oh.
But they didn't find anything meaningful from this.
Mm.
So some people theorized that Andrew may have wanted to start a new life altogether. This I thought was actually pretty interesting. So he was a big fan of the show. I've never seen it, but it's called The Rise and Fall of Reginald Perrin.
I've never seen it either.
No, I think maybe it was like a British show. I don't know. But that was his favorite. And the main character in the show, Reginald, faked his death to start a new life. So some people were like, maybe that's what Andrew thought he could do too.
That's a big undertaking at 14 years old,
right?
Oof.
They also there's another theory that Andrew went to London to commit suicide, but like, what? That makes no sense.
Yeah.
Andrew's parents, they have put more money into his account to see if maybe anything would happen, but it's been remained untouched till today. There have been 122 possible sightings of Andrew that have been reported all over Britain, with 45 from London and 11 from Brighton. Some even claiming that Andrew spoke to them. In November 2008, a man visited Leominster Police Station in Herefordshire in the West Midlands and used the intercom system to talk to a police officer. He had said that he knew Andrew and he had some information about him. But it was like nighttime, so there wasn't anybody directly monitoring the intercom. So it was, I guess like he left a message. And by the time that somebody got to the phone, they didn't know who it was that had called. Police had put out a public appeal for whoever that was to get back in touch, but nobody ever did. Kevin Gosden appealed to the gay community to help find his son. So, which I was like, it's kind of strange to say that way, but They consider that maybe Andrew was struggling with his sexual orientation and he was nervous to come out to his family, or he didn't feel comfortable. So they tried to appeal, see if maybe, you know, someone might have seen him or known him, or I think it's a little bit like, not a stretch, because I don't think that's impossible. It's completely possible. But
it seems like kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, like they didn't have any real reason to think that's why he did that. I think they were just looking for as much help as they could get. Which, I mean,
makes sense. Yeah.
I'm sure I would do the same. So, on January 11th, 2022, so not very long ago, it was announced by South Yorkshire Police that on December 8th, 2021, detectives that were investigating Andrew's case had arrested two men, aged 38 and 45, on suspicion of kidnapping and trafficking. One of the men also was arrested on suspicion of possession of child pornography.
No.
So both men have been released under investigation, but they're believed to be the first arrests ever made in connection to Andrew's disappearance.
Interesting.
The police announced the next day, so January 12th, that they had numerous devices seized and in their possession from the men. And they advised that this could take between 6 months to a year to analyze.
Oh my god.
So there's nothing, I checked, of course, and there's nothing new regarding these, I can't think of what I want to say, devices. But they said it could, 6 months to a year. So Kevin Gostin thanked the public for their support. Family doesn't have any further information other than what the police have released in that statement in January. So.
Well, that was like less than a month ago. So it's very new.
Probably not till like late summer, early fall we'd hear.
It's always trafficking.
Oh, that's it. I know.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me hoped that maybe he was just running away or something.
Because, like, how, like, it's, for an adult, it's so difficult to go, quote-unquote, missing and start a new life, never mind a 14-year-old child. But if you're trafficked, you're dealing with some, like, dangerous people who know what they're doing, like, they know how to hide you, and obviously the people you are trafficked to aren't going to be like, hey, weren't you missing? Like, they're obviously in on it.
Yeah.
So that's the perfect way to, like, hide someone.
Yeah, I just imagine that he probably either met someone, or, because, like, it doesn't really seem like he was online. But who knows?
Because, see, I don't know, because he was 14, so this was, what, like, 2007? Seven. See, like, the internet was so, like, and social media was so new then. It's not how it is now. Like, he could have had social media platforms that no one knew about.
True. Like not under his name, not using his IP address.
Like, when I was, in 2007, I was 16. Like, that was when Facebook just got started, like, for high school students. People were making them. People were still on MySpace, LiveJournal, like, Twitter was very new. So, like, who fucking knows?
That's a good point that I didn't really think about. Like, everything back then was still really, like, brand new. But, I mean, he was really smart, though, because I was going to say, I don't know that I would have known how to do that completely.
Yeah,
but he was super really smart.
Yeah. He could have. And there were so many, and even now there's so many forums or social media platforms that are very, like, small, like, only niche group of people know about them or use them. So, like, right now, if I would go missing, people would check, like, my Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, but
yeah,
those are the main ones, you know?
Yeah, like, I was a part of this, like, forum back when I was a teenager for this, like, fantasy book series that I was really into, and there were maybe, like, 20 of us on there. So there'd be no way. That's, like, immediately what I thought of. There'd be no way that you would go and look there.
Right. And especially, it sounds like he, because he was so quiet and, like, introverted that, like, his parents didn't realize when he was, like, not even home. Like, he could have gone to, like, an internet cafe or just used a computer somewhere else that no one realized that he was using.
Yeah, or at a friend's house.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I hope they find something.
Oh, that's been a long time.
I know, poor guy.
Poor kid.
But he definitely did it on purpose. That's the thing that, like, maybe, like, he was, of course, persuaded to do it, but, like,
sure.
He was pretty, like, he had a plan, he didn't want to take it back, like, he
yeah, he like, went. He wasn't kidnapped from his bedroom. Like,
no.
It sounds like he met someone online, and they were going to go meet up, and he ended up being trafficked. Like, it wasn't what he knew was, or what he thought was going to happen.
Yeah, that's, I think, really what happened.
Trafficking's crazy.
It is horrifying. I hate it.
All right. You ready for this one?
I'm ready.
It's a little long, so I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
I feel like I've been, like, slacking lately, so I'm trying to find a good one.
Okay, I'm ready.
I don't think we did this, but maybe it's because I've heard it on other podcasts, but I checked our list. I don't think we did it, but I'm sorry if we did. So I am covering the case known as the Ken and Barbie Killers.
Oh no, I don't, hold on.
Did we do this?
I don't know.
Stop. I tried looking like 3 times.
No, I don't think we did. Maybe I've just heard this so many times. No, actually, I don't think we did. I don't think we did.
I looked like under different names that they're known by, and I don't think I saw it on the list.
I think Mile Higher did it.
Okay.
And that's what I'm thinking of. So no, I'm pretty sure you're good, because I wouldn't be able to tell you anything about them.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
Whatever.
So this is the Ken and Barbie Killers. So that's what they're known by in the true crime community. But they're also known as Paul Bernardo and Carla Hamalko, who were Canadian serial killers. So some background on the two of them. So Paul Bernardo, also known as Paul Jason Teal, he was born August 27th, 1964 in Ontario, Canada, to Kenneth and Marilyn Bernardo. The family was described as being financially well off, and outwardly they appeared to be a typical middle-class family. Paul was described as being polite, well-mannered, and a lot of people said that he was like the perfect child to his parents. However, there was a lot going on behind closed doors with this family. So, Kenneth, Paul's dad, had actually been charged with child molestation mm-hmm. in 1975 with rumors that he had been molesting his own daughter. Mm. When Paul was 16, his mother had told him that he was actually the result of an extramarital affair.
Oh, no.
So, Kenneth was not his dad. And that's when Paul's behaviors and attitude started to change. So he became very, like mean to his mom and started calling her names like whore and slob. It was also around this time that he developed dark sexual fantasies.
Oh, no.
That involved publicly humiliating and beating women that he had dated. But Paul went on to go to the University of Toronto, Scarborough, in 1982. After that, he had worked for Amway, which is one of the first multi-level marketing schemes, businesses, that sell, like, have you heard of Amway?
I think I only know that it's, like, one of the first ones.
Yeah, I think they're still around, I'm not sure, but they sell, like, health and beauty products and, like, home care products, but they're referenced a lot if you listen to, like, any kind of, like, podcast or, like, research regarding the development of MLMs. Mm-hmm. But as most people who join MLMs, Paul was very heavily influenced by the company And the whole process of, like, get rich quick.
Yeah.
And he was, like, buying books from, like, these motivational speakers that, like, Amway referenced. And he kind of became, like, very full of himself, like, developed, like, this narcissism.
Yeah.
He and his friends would practice, like, pickup lines on women in bars. And they thought they were, remember that show, I think it was on VH1, like, the pickup master?
Yes.
Like, that's kind of, like, what I'm, like, envisioning. So gross. So that's actually when he met Carla Homolka, when he was, you know, picking up chicks at bars. Paul was 23, Carla was 17, so, there's that. Mm-hmm. They were instantly attracted to each other. Gross. And unlike other women that Paul had been involved with, Carla encouraged his sadistic sexual behaviors.
Well, yeah, because she was 17. She didn't know any better.
She's a child. So that's Paul's kind of background. Carla Homolka, also known as Leanna Teal, she was born May 4th, 1970, in Ontario to Dorothy and Karel Homolka. She was the oldest of three daughters. She was described as being well-adjusted, pretty, smart, popular, all the usual stuff. She loved animals, and she was actually planning on working at a vet clinic after high school, but nothing about her and her upbringing seemed to indicate any kind of evil or dark or malicious presence about her. That's really the only background I have on her.
Yeah.
So Paul and Carla start dating, and their relationship was very sadomasochistic. Paul would be the abusive master, and Carla would be, quote-unquote, his willing slave. While they were dating, Paul would go into Scarborough and start raping women with Carla's full knowledge of what was happening.
Oh my god.
So, Paul became known as the Scarborough Rapist, and I have a list of rapes and attempted rapes, and there's a lot, so I'm gonna go through them kind of quickly here. But his MO would mostly be that he would stalk his victims at night as they were getting off, like, a bus, and then attack them on their way home from walking from the bus. So there's a lot. So, May 4th, 1987, he raped a 21-year-old woman in front of her parents' house. May 14th, 1987, he raped a 19-year-old woman in the backyard of her parents' house. July 17th, 1987, he attempted to rape a young woman, but she began to fight back and beat him, so he left and didn't finish the act. September 29th, 1987, he attempted to rape a 15-year-old girl. He broke into her house and into her bedroom. He jumped on top of her and covered her mouth, threatening her with a knife. He bruised her face and bit her ear, but then mom came into the room and Paul left. Now, actually, for this crime, another person was convicted of it, Anthony Hainsmayer, in 1989. But he was eventually exonerated, but not until 2006 when Paul admitted to the crime, which is, like, shitty, obviously. December 16th, 1987, he raped a 15-year-old girl. So this is when the police started noticing that, like, there's all these rapes happening. So they started warning women, especially those coming home from off a bus alone at night, like, don't be alone, there's a rapist on the loose. December 23rd, 1987, he raped a 17-year-old girl, threatening her with a knife. April 18th, 1988, attacked a 17-year-old girl. May 25th, 1988, he was actually nearly caught by police as they caught him hiding behind a tree outside a bus station. And the police were like, hey, they, like, pursued him, but Paul ran off and he got away. May 30th, 1988, he raped an 18-year-old woman. October 4th, 1988, he attempted there was an attempted rape, but the woman had fought back, so he wasn't able to rape her, but he did stab her in the thigh and the buttocks, which required 12 stitches. November 16th, 1988, he raped an 8-year-old woman in her parents' backyard. November 17th, 1988, police developed a task force to try to find the Scarborough rapist. December 27th, 1988, he attempted a rape, but a neighbor heard the commotion and came out to, like, help the woman, and then Paul kind of, like, ran away because he got caught. June 20th, 1989, attempted rape. The woman fought back, and she was screaming, which alerted neighbors, so he fled. August 15th, 1989, he raped a 22-year-old woman. November 21st, 1989, raped a 15-year-old girl. December 22nd, 1989, raped a 19-year-old woman. May 26, 1990, raped a 19-year-old woman. But she was able to give a description of him so accurate that they were able to develop a composite sketch via computer.
Yeah.
And that composite sketch was released to the public.
Mm.
So, around July 1990, several tips had come in, and the tips led to Paul, and he was interviewed by two detectives for suspicion of being the Scarborough rapist, and Paul even gave DNA samples over for forensic testing, and Paul was like, yeah, like, that composite sketch looks like me, like, I can't deny it, but yeah. I'm not the Scarborough rapist. And the detectives that interviewed him, they were like, oh, he seems, like, pretty credible. Like, I don't think he's it.
Probably
like,
not.
Nothing. I think he's fine. So they, like, let him go. Like, that, they took his DNA, but they let him go. And it was the early 90s, so, like, DNA testing was just, like, really in its infancy. So while Paul is committing all of these rapes, obviously Carla is aware of it and encouraging of it. But eventually they decided to get engaged.
Oh, perfect. So,
they get engaged and Carla is telling people that they're so in love, they're happier than ever, like, Paul's so great, this, that, and the other. But Paul was actually growing bored of Carla.
Oh, no.
So he told Carla that since she was not a virgin when they met, he had missed out on that opportunity of being with a virgin, because that matters.
Yeah.
But you know who was a virgin was Carla's 15-year-old sister.
Mm.
So Carla, being a doting partner, was like, I want you to have my sister's virginity as a Christmas gift.
Oh my god.
So, in later interviews, Carla would say that she was trying to minimize the risk to others by, quote-unquote, keeping it in the family.
Oh my god.
But it's like, he already had committed all of these fucking rapes of the public.
Ew.
But there's also the other side that saying, like, yeah, Carla was, like, setting it up or encouraging it, but it turns out Paul himself actually had become obsessed with her 15-year-old sister, Tammy.
Of course.
In the time leading up to this, he would, like, flirt with her, he would look into her window at night, and he would actually go into her room while she slept to masturbate.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So in July 1990, he actually took Tammy, the sister, across the U.S.-Canadian border to go to a beer party, and they got drunk, and he made out with her. Then in December 23rd, 1990, during a Homolka family Christmas party at their house, which Carla's parents, like, loved him. Like, they thought he was, like, the bee's knees. Like, they thought he was great. So they were at this Christmas party at the family house, and Paul and Carla had drugged Tammy's food with an animal tranquilizer that Carla had stole from the vet clinic where she was working. Oh. And they also soaked a cloth with halothane and kept it to Tammy's nose and mouth to keep her unconscious. Wow. So, Tammy went unconscious. Then Paul and Carla took turns raping her. What? On video. Yeah. While the rest of the family was sleeping. Oh. Tammy started choking up vomit. And the couple tried to hide the evidence, like the cloth, the, you know, drugged cloth and her being like naked and fucking raped. They tried to hide the evidence before calling for an ambulance. But then Tammy never regained consciousness.
Oh my God.
So when Tammy was taken to the hospital, they weren't able to detect drugs in her system.
Yeah.
So they concluded that she had died from accidental alcohol poisoning, because there was like eggnog in her system because it was a Christmas party. After Tammy's death, Paul had videotaped Carla wearing Tammy's clothes, pretending to be Tammy.
Ew.
So that's her own sister.
Yeah. What the?
So there's another victim that's in court records just referred to as Jane Doe. So Jane Doe is a 15-year-old girl that Carla had befriended at a pet shop. Mm-hmm. So Carla had convinced Jane Doe to go out on like a girls' night on June 7th, 1991, which I think is also around the time that Carla and Paul got married. I don't have much information about their wedding, but they did get married. So they had a girls' night, they went out shopping, they went out to eat, and then Carla gave Jane Doe alcohol that was laced with animal tranquilizer.
Oh my God.
So the girl fell unconscious. Carla called Paul and told him that she had a wedding gift ready for him.
No.
Yeah.
Just get him a watch.
So Paul arrived to where they were at and videotaped Carla raping the girl.
Ew.
Before he himself would rape her. The next morning, the girl woke up and she felt nauseous and sick, but she thought it was just from it being her first time drinking, and she didn't even know that she was raped. Ugh. The next month, in August, Carla invited Jane Doe to hang out again, and Carla drugged her again. But this time, Jane Doe had stopped breathing while she was being raped. So they call 911 when she stops breathing, but then Jane Doe ended up being fine, like she ended up being able to breathe again. So they called 911 back and was like, oh, actually, everything's fine. Like, we don't need an ambulance. Hmm. And the ambulance didn't show up. They just were like, okay.
Yeah. Like, oh, awesome. Thanks.
Yeah. Like, now you can't do that. If you call 911, they're going to follow up.
Always.
Yeah. But there was no follow-up, and Jane Doe did survive. And she ended up, like, testifying later on. Then there's Leslie Mahaffey, M-A-H-A-F-F-Y, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but June 15th, 1991, Paul was driving at night to steal license plates. Like, he was also in some criminal activity. So he was driving around stealing license plates when he came across Leslie. She had missed curfew and was locked out of her parents' house. So he came up to Leslie and told her that he was actually planning on breaking into a neighbor's house. And Leslie, like, wasn't fazed by this. She's like, okay, like, do you have any cigarettes that I can borrow? And so he's like, yeah, sure. So she followed him to his car, where he blindfolded her and put her in the car. Paul then informed Carla that they had a new victim. Oh, my God. So Carla and Paul videotaped themselves torturing and raping Leslie. The next day, Leslie died.
Oh.
Paul claims that Carla gave her a lethal dose of tranquilizer, but Carla claims that Paul strangled her. Jesus. But either way, she had died, and they decided to keep her body in their basement until they can figure out what to do with it. So Leslie's dead, and her body's in the basement, and Carla's parents and her surviving sister come to their house, to Carla and Paul's house, to have dinner while Leslie's body is in the basement.
Oh my God.
So they have a family dinner. Carla's family leaves, and that's when Carla and Paul thought that the best way to get rid of the body was to dismember it and then encase the body parts in cement, which is what they did, and they dumped the cement blocks in Lake Gibson.
What the fuck?
Then there's Kristen French. On April 16, 1992, Paul and Carla took a drive looking for potential victims, as you do as a serial killer couple.
Of course.
Students were on their way home from school, which is when they came across Kristen French. They stopped her. Carla was holding a map, pretending to be lost, and tried to, like, oh, can you help us figure out where we are? So Kristen comes over, she looks at the map, and that's when Paul grabbed her from behind, held a knife to her, and forced her into the passenger seat. Her parents immediately called the police when she didn't arrive home on time. Like, they knew, like, something was up because she's always home on time.
Yeah.
And within 24 hours, the police assembled a team looking for her. They interviewed witnesses who actually saw the abduction and tried to get an idea as to who may have taken her. And then this leads to Easter weekend. Carla and Paul videotaped themselves torturing, raping, and sodomizing Kristen. They forced her to drink large amounts of alcohol to subdue her.
Oh my God.
Now, later on in court proceedings, it was believed, or the argument was, that Paul and Carla had always intended to kill Kristen because they never blindfolded her, so she would have been able to identify her captors. So they are like, they took her to torture her, and they knew they were going to kill her. The next day, they did in fact kill her before going to Carla's family's house for Easter dinner.
Wow.
Carla claims that Paul strangled her. Paul claims that Carla beat her with a mallet and then strangled her with a noose. Kristen's body was found on April 30th in a ditch. Her body was found washed and her hair was cut off.
That poor girl.
In addition, all these poor girls.
Yes, like, so many poor girls.
So many. In addition to the rapes and murders I had already mentioned, Paul was also responsible for at least 12 additional sexual assaults and rapes, and he was potentially tied to 2 other murders, but those are not confirmed. So, throughout the time of these crimes being committed, Carla and Paul were actually questioned by police several times, but the police were never able to directly connect them with any of the crimes.
Hmm.
Now, during the committing of the crimes, Carla and Paul had filed to have their last name changed to Teale, T-E-A-L-E, which is the name of a serial killer in the film Criminal Law. So they were, like, infatuated with the whole serial killer, like, lifestyle.
Of course they were.
As they were being questioned by police, several acquaintances of theirs had actually contacted the police and saying that Carla and Paul were possibly murderers. Like, you need to, like, check these people out.
Well, just so you know.
Just so you know, like, we think it's them. December 1992, the Center for Forensic Scientists finally started testing the DNA samples that Paul had previously provided 2 years ago.
Damn.
2 years ago. On December 27th of that year, Paul had severely beat Carla.
Oh, my gosh.
Her co-workers noticed her injuries and were like, that's not okay. So they called Carla's parents and told them that, hey, Carla's, like, got beat up real bad. So her parents removed her from the home that she shared with Paul and took her to the hospital, where Carla told healthcare professionals that she was a battered wife, and she filed charges against Paul. Paul had been arrested and then was released on his own recognizance, and Carla at that time moved in with relatives. I think it was with her aunt and uncle. Now, finally, 26 months after Paul had submitted his DNA samples, it came back that he was a match to the Scarborough rapist cases.
Damn.
26 months later.
Damn.
So, he's connected to these crimes. Carla is, like, turning against him, filing charges against him, so there's a rift happening between the couple. Once his DNA came back as a match, he was placed under 24-hour surveillance. The police interviewed Carla, but Carla was more focused on Paul's abuse towards her.
Of course.
Never mind all of these fucking women that he raped and murdered with her. Later on, Carla would tell her aunt and uncle that Paul was, in fact, the Scarborough rapist, and that she and Paul were involved in the rape and murders of Leslie and Kristen.
Mm.
So that's when the police reopened the case of the death of Tammy, Carla's sister, because it was ruled an accidental death. A few days after that, Carla had met with the prosecutor, and she told him that she would cooperate with the investigation in exchange for immunity.
Wow.
The balls on this lady. On February 13th, 1993... their request for a name change that I had previously mentioned was approved, so they became known as the Teals. The next day, and they're still, like, under investigation for, like, all this shit. But the next day, the prosecutor met with the Crown Criminal Law Office director and decided that after becoming aware that these rapes and tortures were on videotape, that they could not grant Carla full immunity due to her involvement in the crimes.
Good.
So, Carla was offered a plea bargain of 12 years in prison for manslaughter in exchange for her cooperation.
Wow.
If she did not accept the plea bargain, she would be charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of second-degree murder, and several other charges, which would lead, obviously, to a longer sentence.
Yeah.
So she accepted the plea deal and went on to cooperate with police. Now, Paul was tried for the murders of Leslie and Kristen. Carla testified against him in court. On September 1st, 1995, Paul was convicted of 2 counts of first-degree murder, 2 counts of aggravated sexual assault, among other charges, and he was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 25 years. Which I don't know 100%, but I think Canada doesn't do life without the possibility of parole. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a thing there. But he was designated as a dangerous offender, which made it very unlikely for him to ever be able to get parole. Now, a side note I have on here, apparently Paul's lawyer had the videotapes of the tortures and the rapes,
mm-hmm.
but he withheld the tapes for 17 months. So, like, you're supposed to hand over any evidence to the other side so everyone can see it, but he had them and he held on to it, like, as a secret and didn't tell anyone about the tapes. So, many people believe that if he had surrendered the tapes, the prosecutor would not have agreed to the plea bargain for Carla, because then they would have seen how involved she was with all of it. But his lawyer was actually charged, but then acquitted of obstruction of justice, but he did face a disciplinary hearing by the Law Society of Upper Canada. Paul had been up for parole several times since being put in prison, but he has been denied every time he went up for parole. In November 2015, Paul had self-published a violent fictional ebook.
What the fuck?
631 pages long. Ew. Called Mad World Order, and it was being sold on Amazon.
Of course.
And it became a bestseller on Amazon.
Of course it did.
But Amazon eventually took it down after a public outcry, like, hey, you should not be selling the serial killer's book and giving him money from it. Paul had undergone psychological testing, which determined that he met criteria for narcissistic personality disorder, and psychopathy, sexual sadism, voyeurism, and paraphilia, not otherwise specified. He is currently imprisoned in Millhaven Institution, which is a maximum security prison in Bath, Ontario. Carla, there have been several legal motions regarding her trial, appeals, and release that, like, there's a lot, so I'm not going to get into all of it.
Yeah.
But long story short is that she served her 12 years and was released in 2005. Now, from my understanding, reading through it, when she was initially released, she was released under a litany of conditions that she would have to make, like, not like the sexual offender registry, but like, you can't have this kind of job, you can't be around these kinds of people. Like, there was a whole list of things that she had to follow for her release. And I don't know if it was her lawyer or like a former lawyer, but someone said like her conditions were tyrannical, like it was too much for someone to follow. And I'm like, she's like a really shitty lady. Like, I think she should be able to follow these.
Yeah.
But eventually, whatever conditions she was under, they were removed, and now she is out on unconditional release. So, what? Like, she's good. She doesn't have to check in with anyone.
What,
like,
the fuck?
That's done. She went on to marry her former lawyer's brother, and they had 3 kids together.
Ew.
Yeah. A lot of people are like, she shouldn't be having kids.
No.
I read that she was eligible to apply for a pardon in 2010, meaning that her crime would be deleted, basically, and it would only come up as, like, if they did background checks, that she's not allowed to work with children or something like that, but it wouldn't give details of her crime.
That's so messed up.
But I don't think she ever pursued the pardon. It's just that she was eligible, so I don't know exactly what happened with that. She is going under that different name that I mentioned, that Tia last name, and she may have changed her name again since she got married. But she's trying to obviously live a low profile.
Yeah.
But when she got out, her sentence and her release were highly scrutinized by the public. There had been some public backlash after she had been released when her employer, who was a hardware store manager, he said that Carla had been in contact with other criminals and she was in contact with minors. So he's like, hey, this lady's like being shady.
Yeah.
And he released her address to the public. Carla was reported to also be volunteering at her children's school, which was obviously another issue that the public had with her. And they're like, she shouldn't be around children.
No.
But her thing's like, these are my children. It's my kids' school. I'm helping them. But she's out on unconditional release and living her life with her new family. Obviously, her and Paul got a divorce at some point, but she's out there living life. Paul's still in prison. And there, one side note was, I saw that, do you know the case of Luca Magnata?
Mm-hmm. That's the cat's one, right?
The guy who, like, killed cats and put videos of it, but it was, like, a whole deeper case.
Yeah.
But Luca Magnata said that he had sexual relations with Carla Homolka. But later on, he said that he completely made that up. He didn't have any contact with her. He just wanted to drop that name. So, that's the Ken and Barbie killers, and I'm assuming they were called the Ken and Barbie killers because they were white with blonde hair. That's the only something.
You know what? Ken and Barbie would never do that.
They would never.
I believe that 100%. They're and, like, great.
They weren't that good looking. I'm just
That's what, putting that out there. When I first, like, heard of this, I remember looking them up and I'm like, I don't really think they deserve that title.
Not my cup of tea.
No. But I think it's a shame.
But how fucked up is that?
That is real fucked up.
Mm-mm. I think Carla, like, I mean, they're both horrible people, but I think Carla's more sadistic than they give her credit for.
I think so, too. I think if any, like, there's something real wrong there. Like, of course, with him as well, but she, like, if she could do that to other, I don't know, there's just something about, like, a woman that can watch that happen to other women, like, and then your sister.
Like, set it up for her to happen to other women, like, partake in the raping and torturing of other women.
Like, men, like, okay, they're men. Women, I just, you hope better. You hope for better things, but.
It's gross.
Yeah.
And the, like, so gross, she shouldn't have been released after 12 years.
I agree.
She is just as bad as he is.
Yeah. Totally agree.
But that's the Barbie and Ken killers.
That was, we so definitely Paul never Bernardo, did that.
Okay, I wasn't sure. It must have been because I heard it on other podcasts.
Yeah, no, we never did that before.
And you don't get Canadian serial killers too often because it's Canada. They're supposed to be nice.
Not these two.
Not these two.
Assholes.
Well, that's it.
That's it.
A special guest next week, so stay tuned for that. Hi. I just found out this morning as I was going through my phone that you can now leave reviews on Spotify. You can't leave any mean words because there's no written part. You just leave us 5 stars and that's it.
Yeah, it only allows you to leave 5.
You're only allowed to leave 5 stars.
Anything lower than that, they discontinue they your Spotify account.
Yeah.
And you go
they'll
to jail.
Cancel it they'll cancel it before you get the chance to cancel your Spotify account. But yeah, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and Spotify. Leave us nice words on iTunes if you want to do that. That'd be very nice. And then follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and you can email us at butwhatdowenowpod@gmail.com. And if you are interested in doing a guest feature segment episode with Marissa while I'm out on maternity leave, let us know.
Yay.
All right. I think that's everything.
That's it.
All right. Have a good night. Bye.
Bye.
What do we know? But what do we know? But what do we know?